Station, we are your interactive entertainment show Squabblebox, and we're going to be with you for the next 2 hours or so. Please say you didn't do it, Maisie.
Shush.
Whilst that last song was going on, me and Maisie were just having a bit of a conversation about the microphones.
We may have been, but don't ruin the magic of radio, Kai. Don't look behind the curtain.
Well, we are on. Maisie was like, "Yep, it's episode 96 now, and we've done 50 breakfast shows as well, coming this Friday." So that's
no idea what you're talking about.
So that means that we're on nearly 200 episodes, probably, with all the added extras in. I know I have with Legends, definitely, and stuff like that. But yeah, anyway, we are on in episode 96, and Maisie went, "Yep, I know which mic is which now."
I didn't say it that way. you are being unnecessarily cruel, and I think we need to introduce ourselves.
My name's Kai Valentine. I'm here, as always, with the lovely Miss Maisie Anderson. How are you doing, Maisie?
I am doing great.
So we're going to be here for 2 hours talking all about our favourite fiction.
Yes, specifically literature.
Yeah, we should
As
say
we
that.
Were asked by one of our fellow presenters last night.
Yes.
Sort of, what kind of fiction?
This is the great thing about our topics now. We just go, make them vague.
Yeah, pretty much.
I had someone suggest to me yesterday that, because yesterday was World Earth Day, which is obviously a wonderful cause. And someone said, "Why don't you do Earth as a topic?" And I went,
I feel like that's something we would try.
You know what? That is probably too vague for us. Even for us, just doing Earth. Like, what would we talk about? Just anything to do with Earth.
Yeah.
Fiction, though, falls into that. So we are celebrating World Earth Day from yesterday by talking all about fiction.
No, we're not.
There is a real reason why we are talking about fiction today, then. That's because it is World Book Night, or National Book Night. I always get that.
Which is different to National Book Day.
Yeah.
National Book Day is when school children dress up like their favourite book characters for a day.
And that comes on March 1st.
Yes. That is not this.
However, no, tonight is World Book Night, which is a national celebration of reading and books, which takes place on the 23rd of April. Every year, books are given out across the UK with a focus on reaching those who don't regularly read and are gifted through organisations including prisons, libraries, colleges, hospitals, care homes and homeless shelters, as well as by passionate individuals who give out their own books within their communities. World Book Night is run by the Reading Agency, a national charity that inspires people to become more confident and enthusiastic readers.
Cool.
So lots of people will be celebrating World Book Night around the globe today.
You know how I should celebrate World Book Night?
How?
Read that book you bought me for Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Have you not read any of it yet?
I've read, I'm on chapter 2.
All right, well, that's not too
bad. But then I had to write a dissertation. So yeah. It kind of got pushed on the back burner. Because this is the thing they don't tell you about university, is for the most part, all sort of reading for pleasure goes out the window completely.
Yeah. What is this reading for pleasure thing?
Unless you can actually like grind out time to do it, by the time that you've read all of your set texts for the week and then done all the reading that you need to do for specific essays that you want to write, even if you do have time to read, like, a couple chapters of a book, you're too tired.
Yeah, I've done little bits of reading for pleasure, but it's been mainly when I've not had a dissertation. Since I started my dissertation, I haven't read for pleasure. I still got half an autobiography to read from back in October.
Yeah, I still have an entire book.
Wow.
Yeah. There's only one, I think, fiction that I've actually read while I've been at university, and that was Terry Pratchett's last book, The Shepherd's Crown.
Ah.
But that was in the summer.
Well, we are
I have plenty of time to read it.
We are going to get on to talk all about our favourite fiction, and you can send in yours too. You can email us on studio@sirenonline.co.uk, on Twitter @SirenFM, or the Facebook fan page Squabblebox.
Or you can always text in on 077 97 800 716, or send a message if you're listening via the Radio Player app. I didn't look at what the number
was.
There's a number in front of me to read out loud. I didn't look at it, and now I'm really worried I've got it wrong.
No, you got it right.
Did I?
Yeah, episode 96, and Woo! You got that one right. Yay. Let's go into our first segment of the show, then. That is Can You Believe That? That's where we ask, can you believe that a news story or something has happened this week? And can you believe, Maisie, that Prince William and Kate presented the Radio 1 chart with Greg James this week?
I couldn't. Well, when I saw it, I thought that seems perfectly normal. They're very, like, the youngest, well, not the youngest generation, but the younger generation of royals tend to be quite sort of free with the way that they can be with the public. So I wasn't surprised to see them in the Radio 1 studio. I was surprised when you told me that they were not invited.
Yeah, it sounds like, now I'm not sure whether it's that they were not fully invited, but they definitely weren't invited to like stick around for the official charts. But they just went, yeah, we're here, can we do it? And they're, yeah, of course you can. Like we're
yes,
going to send away the royals.
Yes, King of England. Yeah. You can do whatever you like. It's kind of your country.
He actually turned around, did Prince William, and said that, yeah, I tune into Radio 1 when I can. And he mentioned that he has sent in many messages over the years, but not used his real name. And I'll just put Charlie.
Oh, that's amazing.
not Charlie, William.
It'd be weird if he put Charlie.
Yeah, no, that would be really weird. But no, he puts like William instead, and
it's like William from London.
I've been sending messages in for years, and nobody's known. But people haven't been giving me shout outs. He says I've been asking for shout outs, and no one's been giving me a shout out.
Oh, so he has a grudge. That's why he was there.
Yeah. So he finally got his shout out from the presenter I can't remember the name of the presenter that he had been messaging in for all these years. But he announced the official charts and revealed that it was revealed about Harry Styles being top of the charts, and he said Harry Styles is here to ruin Ed Sheeran's Easter, which I thought was really funny. But the main reason why they were there, of course, was because they're on a campaign this week all about mental health, and that's something that's close to my heart. And I'm really happy with how they have been getting it out there, because it takes people in these positions to talk about anything, really, but in this case mental health, to get people to talk about it and discuss it and realise that it's not a taboo subject.
Yeah, it does. I mean, so many celebrities have endorsed mental health charities and talked about it publicly. You get more and more well-known public figures, especially within the past couple of years, being very open about personal situations and the types of mental health issues that they have, and being very upfront about it. So it's another step in the right direction for explaining what exactly mental health is.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And their campaign, their charity Heads Together, is actually the official main charity of the London Marathon this year.
Yes, if you were listening to the news just before we came live this morning, they were talking about how the three young royals, they're kind of known as like a trio of young royals,
yeah.
William, Harry and Catherine are all at the marathon. And they're going to be cheering them on.
Yep, 23rd of April, that's today, and lots of people are getting excited about it. I was reading an article last night about the marathon on BBC News that said 10 things that no one tells you before you run the London Marathon.
Oh, I think I saw that article. I don't know if I read it, though.
And it's things like queuing for the toilets. He says you'll think you'll be waiting in the gate for ages and getting ready to start warming up. No, you won't. You'll be queuing for the loo. And as soon as you get back to your place, you'll need the loo again.
Probably.
And it was just a really cool article. So check that out. Because have you ever thought, like, oh, I'd love to go run a marathon or something?
It's kind of on my bucket list. I think I'm going to start with, like, the half marathon first.
Oh, yeah.
That tends to, like, you have to build yourself up to it. You can't go from zero to the full thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's the sort of thing that I think I might enjoy. I'm not built for running. Just me in general and running aren't things that go hand in hand. So I don't know if it'd be a good idea. I might walk the marathon.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'd quite like to do one at some point in my life. I'll see. I'd need to get into better shape.
Yeah, it's so much training.
Yeah, but I think it's a great thing. And good luck from everyone here in Lincoln to anyone who is down in the London Marathon today. If you have any family or friends from Lincoln that are down at the London Marathon today, taking part, going and watching, send us a message and we will give them a shout out on air, because Prince William may not get shout outs, but the people of Lincoln, you definitely can. So we are going to carry on with the show now, and when we get back, we're going to be talking more about fiction. Stay tuned to Siren FM.
Good morning. You are listening to Squabblebox on a Sunday morning. The time is 8:19 and you are here with Squabblebox. Myself,
yay,
Maisie Anderson, the lovely Mr. Kai Valentine. And today we are talking all about fiction, specifically literature fiction, because we're keeping it vague.
Yeah.
As vague as possible.
Yeah, that's the best way to go about things. Just keep them vague and
hope for the best.
Yeah. So we're talking about fiction, Maisie. And were you a big fan of fiction when you were a kid?
Yes, I absolutely love fiction.
What fiction were you? What's the first book that you can remember reading?
The first book I can remember being able to read by myself as a child was this. I think it was called Where We Are, Where Did We Go? It was this book about a brother and a sister who were looking for something.
All right, yeah.
Like, they were just going around the house finding stuff, and I can't remember for the life of me what it was called, and I don't know if my mum and dad would remember.
Not The Magic Key.
No, I did read The Magic Key.
Such a great series.
This is a book that I've never seen another copy of in all my life.
Okay.
But I remember reading it on my own for the first time without any help and being really proud of myself. But
yeah.
You'd think I'd be able to remember the title. I can remember the pictures really vividly.
All right. I think that the first, like I was saying there, I think the first book that I read was probably the Magic Key series. Because, you know, when you're at school, did you have, like, different coloured books for different reading levels, and it was like, now I went home with a green sticker book and then I moved up to blue, and then I remember being stuck on green for ages.
Yeah, we did do that. They colour coded the reading schemes, and I remember Magic Key was one that my school used a lot. Like, that was the main bulk of the books that they had, at least for teaching to read. Because obviously before then you would have mostly just picture books, which still had writing in.
Yeah.
But everyone knows that the classic children's literature is The Hungry Caterpillar.
Oh, of
That's
course.
The be all and end all. Like, some people would argue it's The Gruffalo, but no, it's The Hungry Caterpillar.
How does The Hungry Caterpillar end?
Spoiler alert!
Yeah.
He eats so much he wraps himself into a cocoon, and then becomes a butterfly.
Is that actually how it works? Because I know that they go into a cocoon and then change it to a butterfly.
It's like hibernation.
But it's not because they've eaten.
No, eating a lot is a result of needing to go into your cocoon. So when they know they're about to hibernate, they need more energy, so they eat more.
Wow, I learned all that at such a young age, and it's only just clicking now at the age of 20.
It's a slow burn.
It's a slow burner.
It's one of those books that you read, and it takes you a couple days to like figure out the true meaning.
Yeah.
Like, I've had that with some stuff.
One day I will realise that Bill and Ben are really flower pot men.
Well, that shouldn't have taken you a while. That's in the title.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's in the song.
Yeah, but the book didn't sing the song.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I used to have a lot of books of TV shows and stuff like that, but some of my favourite fiction books as kids were the, I've talked about it before, the Captain Underpants series by Dav Pilkey.
Which they've made into a film.
Which I cannot wait for.
You
I'm so
are so
happy
excited.
About. I cannot wait. I saw it. I saw the trailer pop up online and I saw the animated version of Captain Underpants on, because it is a fully animated film, yeah. And I remember watching it going, oh, I'm not sure whether I'm going to like this. Oh, no. They're going to ruin my favourite series as a kid. No, they're going to ruin it. And the voices that they have got are exactly how I expected them to be. I think Kevin Hart's one of them.
Yeah, Kevin Hart's playing one of the kids.
And I can't remember the name of the other actors, but I just remember seeing it and going, this is exactly what I wanted. But they seem to have done a lot of the books in one go for one movie, which is understandable because, you know, it's not like taking a Harry Potter book. You can't make a full book. You can't make a full feature-length film out of the first Captain Underpants book, which is basically probably the opening scene where they go, this is our teacher. And then he goes, I'm going to... then they turn him into Captain Underpants. I'm really bad at explaining books.
Wait, the children turn him into Captain Underpants? He's not already Captain Underpants.
Once again, spoiler alert, he's their head teacher, and he's a nasty head teacher that they don't like. And they put him in detention, but one of the kids has bought a ring, which is one of those hypnosis toy rings, and they decide to hold it up into his eyes, and it does something to their head teacher, which then means that he's completely under their control.
Now, I had a Captain Underpants book. I had one, and it was out of the sequence. It was just I just read the cartoon bit because I didn't understand what was going on.
Yeah.
What? I didn't get any of that.
So they used to, the two kids used to create a comic book.
Yeah.
They wrote a newspaper comic strip. Light years ahead of their time. No, they're not really. But very creative kids about their head teacher as this Captain Underpants guy. And then they actually turn their head teacher into Captain Underpants with this hypnosis ring. And it means that every time they shout, we need Captain Underpants, and clap their hands, he turns into Captain Underpants. Oh, it's click their fingers, and he turns into Captain Underpants.
Right. That sounds quite, like, malicious.
It's a really fun story.
If you don't think about it too hard.
I can't wait for the film. It's made by the same people who made Shrek.
DreamWorks?
Yes, I believe so. And it's the same director, I mean.
Oh, okay. So it's the same team. Within DreamWorks.
So I'm really hoping that it does well. I mean, you know, it's by the same people who made Shrek, so there's going to be five. There's going to be five things, and
I
by the end of it, I'm probably
they're making a fifth Shrek.
I know. I'm probably going to hate the franchise by the end of it. But they have the wording of the title for the Captain Underpants film is actually quite interesting, because I'm trying to get the official Captain Underpants movie. Let's have a look at the official title. The official title is Captain Underpants, the first epic movie. Which makes me think that they're planning more.
They're either planning on doing more Captain Underpants, or they're suggesting that no movie has been truly epic until this one right here.
But I just cannot wait. I'm really looking forward to this now. And it's not long. It's out in cinemas on June the 2nd in the US. I'm not entirely sure about over here in the UK. I actually think it's before that in the UK.
It depends where its production would be. If it was produced in the UK, it's more likely to be released here first.
Well, it actually got held back release in America. So it says release Captain Underpants first epic movie was expected to be released on the 10th of March 2017, but in September 2015 the Boss Baby took over its date, and the film is now scheduled for the 2nd of June.
Actually not that long away.
Yeah, it doesn't mention about the US, but about the UK, but I'm presuming that it's around the same date.
Well, we can look that up and go into the next song, and then when we come back, I'd like to talk more about adaptations.
Yes, cool.
Hello, you are listening to Siren FM. That was All Time Low with Time Bomb. We are Squabblebox on Sunday morning. We're talking all about fiction.
Yes, we are.
We are talking all about fiction. And we were talking just before that last song about the very one of the newest adaptations to come to film, which is Captain Underpants.
Oh,
and
definitely.
That's something that is very our generation. I don't know how popular it is before then, but that
probably not at all. I mean, I think it first got released '94, so maybe a little bit before our generation.
So maybe our older brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
But yeah, because this is an interesting thing that I find is a really quite an interesting debate between me and my other friends who enjoy film, is the adaptation argument. That there's actually a lot of studies about adaptations when it comes to academia, but the argument for fans tends to sort of differ, especially because a lot of teen fiction gets turned into adaptation or gets turned into film, and sometimes TV a lot. I mean, this must be a trend that you've noticed.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And a lot of teen drama, or teen fiction, tends to be very dramatic, tends to be very dark, and tends to almost follow a really similar pattern. And that's just a thing of the genre. But one thing that kind of, for some reason, it's included in teen fiction, even though I would disagree it might not fit too well, is Harry Potter.
Yes.
It's technically teen fiction, but only the last two books, really. Before then, it's mostly, it is still a coming-of-age story throughout the whole seven books, but I wouldn't say it gets specifically teen until about Order of the Phoenix.
Until they become teenagers.
Yeah, when they start getting really angsty, that's when it becomes teen fiction. But before then, it's more of a child, the first two books in particular are very childlike. There's nothing in it they're actually written for children. If you go back and read the first two, they're written in a style that is easier for children to read.
Yeah.
There's an actual physical difference between the way that they're written. They get more sophisticated as they go on, with the intention of the audience growing up with the books.
I think that's one thing that J.K. Rowling did really well, though, is, like you say, she saw that the audience would grow up with the books, and sort of adapted her writing style for it accordingly.
Exactly. I mean, there's also the fact that as a writer, she would have improved in leaps and bounds throughout that very, very long experience. I mean, it took her just over 10 years to write all the books, I think.
Probably a little bit longer.
I'm kind of going off the first publication to writing the rest of them, because she was actually spent absolutely years writing the first one before it even got before a publisher picked it up. The interesting thing about adaptation is one thing that you'll hear a lot, and especially for teen fiction, is it wasn't as good as the book.
Yeah.
It's a phrase that I hear a lot.
Yeah.
And it's understandable. A lot of people, and it happens a lot with fantasy as well, actually, a lot of people get really angry or annoyed when something that they love isn't as they expected it to be on screen.
I have this issue with a lot of books. And you heard me talking about the Captain Underpants book and how I was scared that it wasn't going to be exactly how I thought of it in my head.
Exactly. But this is a thing that I've been caught out as well. I've said the same thing, particularly about Harry Potter, where I've said that, oh, it's not as good as the book. But at the same time, I realised that we need to stop looking at them as the same thing. They are different texts.
Yeah.
In the sense of the book is, yes, it's the original text. It's what the films and the TV show or the whatever it's been adapted into is based on. However, why would you actually want a carbon copy that's exactly the same? Why would you spend your money just watching it on the screen instead of using your imagination if it's going to be exactly the same, if there's not going to be something new there?
I think it's one of those things about expectations where people expect it to go one way and then it goes another. People were like, and then people get, because some people who read the books first before the films like to say, oh, well, I know how it's going to end. And then when they find out that, oh no, it didn't go that way, they go, oh no, I don't like this. This isn't how I remember it.
I know. Well, this is something that I always find really interesting, and it's a complete shift in that dynamic, is Game of Thrones and Walking Dead. Walking Dead makes an active choice not to follow the comic book sometimes.
Yes.
Like, they tend to stick along the same lines, they have the same really important moments, but they'll adapt them slightly. So that, yes, the audience may think they know what's going to happen, but not always. There's always going to be something slightly different that you weren't expecting, and that's really clever in the sense of writing, because it means that even the audience who's already read the comics understands that the TV series is different. It's not the same as the comics. They are two completely different stories, but with the same characters. It's like watching fan fiction, which kind of works better, I would say, than trying to make a carbon copy. And the same has happened with Game of Thrones, where R.R. Martin, who writes the Game of Thrones series, writes very slowly. That's his thing. He's an older man. He doesn't care what time he brings out the books, as long as they get brought out. And, you know, he's the one writing it. It's his prerogative. And however, the TV show can't do that. It can't just say, well, we're going to take 6 years off before we give you the next season.
Yeah.
So they've...
Imagine if they did. Imagine the backlash.
People would go absolutely... they would hate it. They would be in a complete frenzy about it. There would be riots. People would be dressed as dragons.
It'd be like that episode from Bruce Almighty. This is my new thing now. I just quote things from make references from Bruce Almighty.
Yeah, but without explaining what scene.
The one where the lottery didn't where everyone won the lottery, so everyone wins it,
yeah,
and
so
the whole place just went into meltdown.
Even though by that logic they'll only get like a dollar each.
Yeah,
yeah. There's yeah, it would be like that. And the really weird thing about Game of Thrones is the fact that it's the TV show has surpassed the books in narrative now,
which is weird.
It is. It's really unheard of, and it means that. And one thing that the internet picked up and was really sort of vocal about is the fact that all of those people who had read the books but were really snobbish about the TV adaptation, who were going around going, oh, well, I've read the books and they're better, and they, like, oh, all of this stuff gets explained, and, oh, it's such a rich story. It's like, yes, it is, but you don't need to assume that one is lesser because it's a TV show. But now that's shifted.
Yeah.
Because there's no way of really knowing until the next book comes out whether the books are going to start taking some inspiration from the TV show. But what we do know is that the end goal is the same, even if there's different paths to getting there.
Yeah.
So, like, the creators for the show and George R.R. Martin have had a conversation about how the overarching story is going to end. And so they're both going to aim for that point, but they're going to do it in two different ways.
Yeah.
Which is amazing to me.
Does R.R. Martin watch the series?
I don't know if he watches it. I know that he has, that he goes to the press releases and that he, when there's a rap party, he hangs out with the actors, and he actually, because he's well known for killing off characters quite quickly, he said that he was once sat at dinner with some of the actors, and they were having a great time, and they were lovely people, and he was so amazed that he had, like, his characters were coming to life, and they were played by such amazing actors, and then he looked around the table and thought, I've made all of these people unemployed. Because everyone who was at that table had been in some way killed off in the show.
I guess one of the good things about him, the series being ahead of the books as well, is that, like, I'm sure that R.R. Martin knows where he's wanting to take the books,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, has a good idea of what he's wanting to do. But if he ever gets stuck, if he ever thinks, oh, I'm not sure what I want to do with this character, he could go, oh, well, if I nick that from the TV adaptation.
I don't know what the rules are about that.
If I go, well, you know what, I'll go with that. That's exactly what I had in my mind to begin with. Then
I don't know. Like, I would love to know, but I don't think
HBO
we ever will.
HBO read his mind. I'd just go, you know what, let's just go with your story. You've done all the work for me. I'll just...
Just give me the scripts,
and I'll
expand.
Yeah.
I wish it could work that way. Well, I bet he wishes it could work that way. It would save him an awful lot of work.
But
the thing, like, when it comes to adaptations, I love the idea that you can have the same start point and end point and watch two different journeys. Because, like, I really like Choose Your Own Adventure books. I love them. They're the best. They are a great way of using your... You know, like if you want to play D&D but have no friends, it's great. That's what you do. You do, like, that's the type of fiction we should talk about later, is read your own adventure books. So the fact that you can have different mediums or medias telling the same story but from different ways of, like, resolving the conflict is amazing to me. That feels so interactive as well. Because you can watch the same characters and they'll do a different thing each time.
Which is really, it's a great thing. And I've never actually really, I've never done that to an extent. I've seen it in games.
Yeah, it happens in games a lot.
But I've not seen it happen in fiction, in, like, something I've been reading
watching. That's another element of fiction that is quite interesting, is what is known as sort of like interactive stories. Which are pretty much games that where you don't actually do an awful lot. Like, it's mainly reading the story and picking, like, maybe places you go, people you talk to in certain orders. But for the most part, a lot of those interactive stories will end the same. They have the same end point. They don't have multiple endings, and your choices don't really matter too much. That's a very linear kind of interactive story. However, you can get... like the company Telltale are really well known for making these very diverse interactive games where you can have several different endings, kind of, depending, and different things will happen and your actions actually have consequences. If you have a fight with someone in the game, that person will come back later and be angry at you, but they will also have, like, physical damage. Like, you can see in that scene that the fight has taken place. Whereas if you didn't do it on a different game save, he won't be as mad at you, and he won't have any indication that you fought.
Strange, it really is.
It's a really cool way of telling stories, and I know that. And the funny thing is, books have been doing it for years.
Yeah.
Choose Your Own Adventure books have been around for decades. I think, and they're so cool.
Why haven't they caught on then?
I think they were quite big, but they were really ingrained in nerd culture before nerd culture became a niche, cool, hipster thing. So you know how it's kind of like the golden age of the geek?
Yes.
Where video games are considered mainstream, where sci-fi and sci-fi and fantasy are becoming huge box office things rather than really niche things.
Completely.
Whereas, like, in the 80s and 70s, when nerd culture was very small, it was very impact, like, it was very tight. And so that was actually something that didn't expand very much. The Goosebumps series, which is another series from our childhood, and I think maybe a couple generations before us as well, and after us. I say a couple generations after us, there's like one generation after us.
Yeah.
But the really interesting thing about that is the fact that I didn't even realise that, like, Goosebumps was a... I didn't know it was a book for a while.
All right.
Because there was a TV show.
Yeah.
I know I have a lot of friends who read the Goosebumps books, but I didn't because I don't like horror. I'm more akin to it now, but when I was a kid, I didn't like it at all. And they made Goosebumps Choose Your Own Adventure horror stories. But these are horror stories that are okay for kids to read, obviously. They're not too gruesome.
Yeah.
But I just think that's really cool.
Yeah, I think it was really cool.
I feel like me and you, like, this is a one thing, the way that I learned about Choose Your Own Adventure books, well, the first one that I've ever, like, actually seen anyone play, was on a charity live stream where two people played a Choose Your Own Adventure book together. One of them made all the decisions and the other one did read the book and acted as if he was the narrator. And then while they were doing it, their illustrator was drawing what was happening behind them. In a green, on, like, they had a green screen, so they were drawing what was behind them. It was the Yogscast Humble Bundle. Humble Bundle. It's a tongue twister. But, and they've done it every year since with a different book. And they're known as the Fighting Fantasy series, is the books that they use. Uh-huh. And that's, like, the best ones are the Fighting Fantasy. And they actually connect. The books connect. So you have, you have things in some books that get mentioned later on in other books in the series. I've been talking about Choose Your Own Adventure books a lot.
No, it sounds really, really cool. So we're going to go into a couple of songs now before the news at 9 a.m. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with one of the music students from here at the University of Lincoln. Cameron will be in the studio and you can hear more after 9 o'clock. Stay tuned to Siren FM. You're listening to Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's first community radio station. We are your Sunday breakfast show, Squabblebox, and myself and Maisie Anderson are joined in the studio now by a representative of Labyrinth of a Life coming up at the University of Lincoln as a part of the music department this week, this Wednesday and Thursday. Cameron is in the studio with us. Cameron, welcome to the show. And would you like to tell us a little bit about what the event is all about?
It's called Labyrinth of a Life. It's a very unique sort of performance. We're going to take an audience through a physical maze. And we have this character, we have this story. And so we're trying to tell this story and this journey of this character that we've come up with. And you'll experience that while walking through the physical maze and just sort of experiencing this character's experiences through the means of film and music. There's an element of dance. There's different types of music. So there's live music, there's pre-recorded music. And there's lots of different ways of trying to to help you experience what this character is experiencing himself, and so you should share that and share his journey in a way.
And what is the journey that the character is going on?
Well, the character has certain mental challenges in his life, and he has certain tragedies. I don't want to give away the story too much, but he certainly has a tough time in part of his story. And part of that is due to his mental challenges. So it was a really difficult and challenging thing in itself to get that across to the audience. We're working in partnership with a mental health charity as well. And hopefully through this, ultimately it brings awareness to mental health issues. That's part of the reason why this character has that in his story.
Obviously, this is in support of Mind, a wonderful charity. And if you've not heard anything about Mind, do go and check them out. You can find out more by just typing Mind, the mental health charity, into Google. And Labyrinth of a Life tells the story of someone with a lot of challenges in their life, and it sounds like it's going to be an amazing piece. It's a maze.
Yes, physical maze, yeah.
All around the AAD building here at the University of Lincoln. Anyone who's ever been in that building will know that it's quite a maze in itself anyway, so I can see why that is the perfect building for it.
Now, this is quite a big installation that you've done. So how many students are actually taking part in this?
There's about 9 to 12 students sort of involved, probably close to 20 if you include the dancers.
Oh, okay. So I expected it to be a much larger group.
You know, there's not many of us in terms of music students, second years, which is who's putting it on, basically. But the good thing about it is it's collaborative in a lot of ways. We've worked with the dance students, and we've worked with some film people. So it really stretches out to all the arts in terms of bringing it together.
So this is part of your University of Lincoln music course, then?
Yeah, it's part of our course. It's the joint show module that we have.
That's really cool. I think it's great. And if you want to find out more, it's at Joint Show on Twitter, or search for Labyrinth of a Life or Joint Show on Facebook too. So I'm really excited. I think I'm definitely going to come along to this. And yourself, do you want to tell everyone a little bit about your role, Cameron, and what you've done for the project?
Yeah, so my main tasks for this project was mainly composition and writing the music that's going to be pre-recorded and played. Also the filmmaking process, so I had a role in directing and writing some of the story in the films that we have that are shown, that are projected, one's projected on a TV. So the filmmaking and the writing of the music was basically my input to the project.
I think that's really cool, and I can't wait to come and see it. So you talk about how the piece does talk a lot about this character and brings to light mental health. Do you think that it's important for things like music in general, or pieces of theatre, or
I think the arts as a whole?
The arts of the whole, to bring forward and make people talk about these subjects that may be considered taboo in the past.
Yeah, I think when we came up with the story and we decided maybe that our main character should have these challenges, we immediately thought it would make sense to make the whole thing a real awareness to people about people who have these issues in real life. It's not just something we're making up for a story. It's very real. And the chance to make people aware of it, to help people, we thought it would be good to do that. And so as soon as we thought it's something we could do, we jumped at the chance to get in partnership with Mind and make it a real thing.
And has it been a fun piece to make? Have you enjoyed it?
Oh, definitely, yeah. It's really enjoyable. It's collaborative. And yeah, we've been doing stuff we're good at, obviously bringing what we know to the table from all our different backgrounds, but I'm sure all of us, it would be fair to say that we've all done something different as well, and definitely gained some new skills under doing different things. So it's been a really enjoyable and challenging thing to do.
what's your hope then for the people who come and see it? What do you hope that they take away from the project?
I hope, obviously, that they're more aware of the mental challenges that people face in the real world from the story that we have, but also just to enjoy what we can offer as music students and what we've come up with in terms of the whole experience. It's a maze with music, with film, with dance, with interactivity, and just to enjoy the whole thing and just take it as one whole experience.
So this installation and performance is going to be going on the 26th and the 27th of April. So that is this week on, looking at my calendar now, Wednesday and Thursday. And it's 7 till 9 p.m. and it's going to be staggered times, is it?
Yes, it's half an hour slots, so 7 till 7.30, etc.
And how can people, do people just turn up or do they book themselves onto the slot?
If they go onto the Facebook page, there should be a link there and they can book which time they'd like to come on either day.
Awesome. So thank you very much, Cameron, for coming in and talking about us. And everyone, please do go and check out Labyrinth of a Life. Life is a journey with an unknown end at the University of Lincoln's AAD building on the 26th and the 27th of April. Find out more details by searching for Joint Show on Twitter or Labyrinth of a Life on Facebook. Thank you very much, Cameron.
Thanks for having me.
Hello, you are listening to Sunday Breakfast here on Siren FM, Lincoln's first community radio station. This is the Squabble Box team, and Woo! Today we have just had a lovely interview about a very interesting installation?
Event installation. I'm going to call it art event. Music art event. Labyrinth of a Life. Thank you, Cameron, for coming on the show. This is part of the joint show by the University of Lincoln's Music Department. It looks really fun.
I know. I love hearing about modules at the university that encourage collaboration between departments, especially because I feel like there are some courses that could really do with talking to other courses, especially in sort of the more creative industries, because if you're making a film, having a music student on your side...
Drama and media.
Having a composer on your side. I know that there's a little bit of collaboration amongst media students about like the audio people and the media people.
Not enough.
Stop it.
Sorry.
This has all been written in my evaluation. It's fine.
But they know. The great thing about this event though is that it's not just university students who are invited along.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone from the local community of Lincoln anywhere is able to come along to see Labyrinth of a Life and come and check it out. I'm going to be there, and I think you all should be too.
Mm.
So we've been talking.
It's free entertainment. You can't really argue with that.
Oh, completely. I completely agree with you there, Maisie. So we've been talking about fiction today.
We have been talking about fiction.
I have an article ready that's all about books.
Yes,
which
you told me about this and I'm very intrigued.
Yes, this is an article about books that British people lie about reading, and we'll come back to it in just a moment. I think we should go into another song.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone at home should let us know which books they believe are on this list, or have you ever lied about reading a book? And we will have this conversation, Maisie, when we get back as well. We've got a couple of tweets in this morning. One from Tracy Edgers saying, "Good morning, I'm listening to Squabblebox Sunday Breakfast here on Siren FM talking about fiction and Sunday Girls coming up at 10 till 12. Good morning, Tracy. Your cereal looks interesting." It looks interesting. I don't, what cereal is that, Tracy? Yeah. But the best thing about that photo is that you are listening to Squabblebox. She also then went on to say, "I did World Book Night 1 year. She said it was great giving a book to a woman in a chip shop who had never read a book, and it was so uplifting, which is really, really cool. And that's what it's all about.
I mean, as well as the Facebook, we've had people emailing in. Christopher Clarkson, our very own, has...
sounds like he's our kid. That's not...
Oh, our Chris.
Our Chris.
He has sent an email in asking a very heated question. Does J.R.R. Tolkien's books compare to that of J.K. Rowling in terms of magic, strange occurrences... and a different world?
Oh, that's... Now, as someone who has never read the Harry Potter books or the Game of Thrones series, I am not in any... What? What you...
You've just confused J.R.R. Tolkien with George R.R. Martin.
Well, I'm sorry. Of all the people...
Oh, all the nerds are going to get you. You've just mixed up Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings.
Ah, right. Well, I've never seen either. What else haven't I seen that's going to annoy people? Lion King's the easy one.
You still haven't listened to Ready Player or Ready Player One.
That's the one thing. Like, all these.
I should just lend you the copy. I have it on audiobook and I have a physical copy. I should lend you one of them.
I will read the physical copy.
The audiobook's so good, though.
Yeah, but I don't have time to.
Not like, Josh Whedon. Will Whedon.
I will read the... Oh, all the nerds are going to be
after
you.
They're going to be so mad at me.
The thing is, I consider myself to be a little bit nerdy, so...
You have very specific nerddoms.
Yeah.
You have the most niche nerddoms I've ever heard of.
What niche nerddoms do I have?
Your wrestling figure collection is quite niche.
Yeah.
You're quite nerdy about specifically Huddersfield Town, the football team.
Yeah, more about just wrestling, to be honest. I think wrestling's the big one.
Yeah, more about wrestling in general. But there's a couple other things that you're really into. Comedy. You're a comedy nerd.
Yes, I am a comedy nerd.
Through and through.
That used to be in my Twitter bio. It's not anymore because social media manager at Siren FM had to fit in there.
But no, that's a really heated question to ask because it's... Because they are... It's technically the same genre. Because...
Yeah.
Fantasy is a really weird genre because it's really difficult to compare texts.
I can imagine.
Because they're always really out there. I mean, one thing that Terry Pratchett did when he was still alive, when he was writing, he wrote fantasy through and through with small elements of sci-fi kind of thrown in occasionally. And he made a very tactful decision to never read fantasy. He didn't read a single fantasy book for that entire time that he wrote any of his Discworld series, which is 50 books long, because he knew that if he ever got accused of copying someone else's idea, that he can say quite openly in court, "I've never read any of these books that you claim I've copied." It's like, how could I have possibly? I've not read a fantasy book since I was like 12.
Oh, well, that's...
It was quite clever.
Quite clever. Before we go to the
next... means he missed out on a lot of good books, though.
That's true. We do have another tweet in. This was 20 minutes ago from Uni Lincoln Music, at Uni Lincoln Music. Give them a follow. Check out their department. They say, "We even make our students work on a Sunday. Good luck, Cameron. # labyrinth of a life." So... Thank you.
You did them proud.
Thank you very much to Cameron for coming on the show. Make sure you check out # labyrinth of a life. And whatever you're up to this morning, have a great morning. But stay tuned to Siren FM.
Well, speaking of music.
Oh, right.
there's a new song.
Oh, yes.
And the 14-year-old inside of me got very excited over the weekend. Over the past week. Because Paramore's released a new song.
I don't think I know a Paramore song.
You do, because I play them on here a lot.
All right, I don't think I'm... you definitely don't know this one. I don't think I've willingly listened to a Paramore song. They're all going to come after me now.
This is a song that was released earlier this week by Paramore called Hard Times.
Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's first community radio station. There's the new Paramore song. Doesn't sound like Paramore at all.
It doesn't sound like Paramore at all, but...
actually quite liked it.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's rude. But, this is the first single to be taken from the band's fifth album, After Laughter, which is going to be out May the 12th, 2007. It is also the first album to feature drummer Zach Fario since he rejoined the band in February.
Cool. I knew we'd find a reason for those notes on Myriad one day.
Oh, could you not tell that I know that instantly off the top of my head?
Episode 96, and we're using the notes, yeah. Good morning to everyone listening at home. Good morning to Nick Elliott. Good morning to Tracy, because Tracy's messaged in saying, my fascinating breakfast was almonds and honey granola with hazelnut milk and fresh raspberries and blueberries with a big mug of Clipper Organic tea.
Oh,
yum.
That's far too grown up for us. We're planning on going to McDonald's after this.
Are we?
Are we? I was told there was McDonald's.
I can't afford McDonald's.
Oh no.
I will stick with my sandwiches.
Your bagels.
I've made a pack up.
Pack up is such a weird term, but I love it. I've never heard it before, like yesterday.
I used to always say packed lunch, but now I say pack up and I think it works.
Yeah,
I'm sticking with it.
It's quite
pack up.
It's like quaint.
Yeah.
It's like, I have my pack up today. I need to get you like a proper lunchbox though.
So good morning, and we hope you're all enjoying the show. Keep tweeting us at Siren FM, and let's have a look at this article that I was telling you about. We're talking all about fiction, and this is according to BBC News and many other sites across the internet over the last couple of days. Too busy to read? You're not the only one. Work, kids, checking your phone, but reading a book, it just doesn't happen as much as it used to. A new survey, though, suggests that two-thirds of Brits wish they had more time to read. A survey of 2,000 UK adults by the Reading Agency found that 67% would like to read more, but nearly half, 48%, admit that they are too busy, and more than 35% said they struggle to find a book they really like. So, people being too busy?
To be fair, we were saying the exact same thing before, in the first hour, I think.
Yeah.
We were talking about how student life does tend to mean that fiction and reading for pleasure tends to go out the window. Unless you really carve out time to do it. Like, I do have friends who read, like, it seems almost like 50 books in a year. And they can get through that, no problem. But still do all their other work, which makes me really wonder how much of their work they're actually doing.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. But the big thing that this article has found and this survey has found is that we are all big, fat liars in this country.
It's a bit harsh.
We lie about the books that we've read and we claim that we've read them when we've actually only seen the film. And did you know that millennials are the generation most likely to lie about their reading habits, with 64% of 18 to 24-year-olds fibbing about the number of books or kind of books that they have read?
What was that percentage?
64% of 18 to 24-year-olds. So
I want to be angry on behalf of our generation.
So 64%, there are two of us in this studio. There's three of us in the offices. Yeah. So that means that at least one of us, one and a half,
one and a half of us has lied about reading certain books.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's definitely
actually,
not you.
64% of. Yeah, one and a half ish. So I've
maths.
No, I think I've probably. I think a lot of people have claimed that they've read books, but. Have only
I
seen
don't
the
know
films.
If I actually have.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I have.
I'm sure I must have done at some point, like in my youth.
So some of the books are quite obvious ones
okay.
that people
can
that,
I can I make a couple of guesses?
Yeah, so some of them are quite obvious. Some of them are a little bit out there, and you kind of go because some of them are quite hard books and quite difficult books, and then some of them are like, but why would you lie about reading that book? Oh, there is one book on here that I have lied about reading.
Oh, okay. Oh, is it 1984?
No. I tried reading that. It was too hard. I will admit that.
Okay.
1984 defeated me. Big Brother did not like me.
Did you get sent to room 101?
Yeah.
Did you get that far in the book?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I'm just there going, why am I going to meet Frank Skinner?
Yeah. It's sad that a lot of people don't know what that show is a reference to.
Yeah. So we'll kick things, before you start doing some guesses, actually no, I'll let you do some guesses okay. first, and then I'll mention the one that I have lied about.
I imagine a lot of it is going to be classic literature, so 1984 by George Orwell. Might be on there.
By George Orwell is not on there. Okay. I think that's the book where everyone goes, you know what, it's defeated me, I'm not afraid to admit that it was too difficult.
To be fair, considering that it got, I think at some point last year, they ran out of copies on Amazon.
Yeah.
So a lot of people have been reading it.
That's true. There's 13 books on this
okay, one. So I'm going to say Clockwork Orange.
No.
War and Peace?
No.
Ooh. The Da Vinci Code? Like, that's not classic literature, but like the Da Vinci Code.
The Da Vinci Code is on there.
Yeah.
That
why
is
would you lie
number,
about reading
number
the Da
four.
Vinci Code? I'm guessing like something slightly more like classic, like maybe Pride and Prejudice might be on there.
Pride and Prejudice isn't on there.
Are these going to be really weird books that why would you lie about them?
I think there's some in there that you go, you know what? Because a lot of them are ones that have had film adaptions.
Oh,
so that's
okay.
The point. People have claimed that they have read the that they've watched the film.
So
people have watched the film and claimed
like,
they've read the book.
The Hobbit.
The Hobbit is not on there.
I'm surprised by the amount of books I know.
I know, so am I.
The Harry Potter series?
The Harry Potter series isn't on there. Shall I go through
it? I don't think anyone would lie about reading Harry
the
Potter.
The one that I lied about reading
okay.
comes in at number 13, so it's right at the bottom of the list. And it's The Kite Runner by Khalid Hussein.
You had to do that for your A-level.
AS level.
And you didn't read it?
No, I watched the film. I read bits. Read the bits that we were...
No, Kai.
Hey, I did well in the exam.
That being said, I did claim that I had read Jane Eyre. Which
have
I
you
did
not.
No, I read the first few chapters I loved. They were like, her as a child is great. As soon as she becomes an adult, I hate it. It becomes a terrible book after that point.
Let's go through a few more. Number 12, Gone Girl.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
Gillian Flynn. Number 11, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Ken Kesey.
Really?
Yeah. Number 10, The Godfather. A lot of people lying about reading The Godfather. Number 9, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Number 8, now this is the one where I go, why are you lying about reading this?
Yeah.
Bridget Jones's Diary.
Why would you lie about reading Bridget Jones's Diary?
It's not like it's the most difficult book in the world. Plus, you could just say, oh, I've seen the films and it's okay.
Yeah, like, that's not one of those really hotly contested adaptation arguments.
Where you go, oh, the film is so much better.
No, the films are their own thing at the moment. They've gone off on its own path.
Number 7, The Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
Number 6, Trainspotting.
Okay, now that one does make sense.
People are lying about...
I think a lot of people don't even know it was a book.
Now, number five, this is a book that I read before the films came out. I read the series before the films came out, The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins.
Why would you lie about reading The Hunger Games?
Well, people will have seen the films and gone, oh, yeah, I've read the books.
But the books aren't the same.
They are... they're not as big. They're not as big changes as, say, the end of Bridget Jones' Diary.
Yes.
Like the third Bridget Jones' Diary book is completely fiction. Like, well,
it's refabricated. What you mean is the Bridget Jones's baby.
Yeah.
The third film is completely fabricated. It's not that based in the book.
Yeah. But I love the series of The Hunger Games. It's one of my favourite book series.
So, did you find it weird reading from the perspective of a 17-year-old girl?
I think, in a way, it made me understand women more.
Women in a post-apocalypse, strange...
I think it was interesting. It was, because there were some things in there that you sort of sit there... And but it wasn't written like... Because it wasn't written like what you'd expect to... Because a lot of fiction, especially from before our generation, if it was written from a perspective of a teenage female, you would a lot of it would expect it to be like, oh, it's all about boys. And
I'd argue a lot of the Hunger Games, there are conflicts that revolve around her love
life.
That
has been a lot of that has been materialized in the films.
I might need to read the Hunger Games.
It's not as relevant in the books. Like, it's there, and there is that love story going on, but it's not at the very forefront.
It's not the be-all and end-all.
Yeah, she wasn't lusting over guys like she is in the films as much. It's a lot more of her... I think she's a stronger independent woman in the book series.
I only ask because I read the Adrian Mole series when I was young, and it's a Bridget Jones-esque kind of style. It's written as if it's his diary or his journal. And it was really strange to read because it's from the perspective of a 13-year-old boy, and I was about 16 when I read it, and it was really strange. Actually, I think I was even younger than that. And it was really strange because he was in the book. It's written by a woman as well. I think it's Sue Hopkins? I might have that completely wrong. It's Sue something. Townsend. It's Sue Townsend. And the thing I found really weird about it was the fact that he was talking about his experience growing up as a boy, and I didn't recognise any of it. Because why would I?
Yeah.
I grew up as a woman. So, like, when you hit the puberty barrier, it's completely different.
Yeah, I gotta admit.
So I learned a lot about what... Not all, obviously, because I don't want to generalise, but what some boys experience, which I think is actually really useful.
And I think that was one of the reasons why I actually quite liked The Hunger Games as well, is because you did see it from that other perspective, which even though we're in a society now where things are, in a way, in some senses, a lot better than they were 30, 40, 50 years ago.
There's less secrets about the opposite gender.
Yeah. And even though we're in a better place with things like equality now.
Better, but not
yeah,
fixed,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It has improved since then, but not completely. We are at a point where we're seeing that, you know, you're able to see both sides of things.
I do find it really interesting because, I mean, we've gotten back onto teen fiction, which isn't really surprising.
No.
I'm not at all surprised by that.
Well, we're only just out the side of our teenage years.
Yeah, I suppose we are, but it feels like it was so long ago.
It does.
We're only in our 20s.
Shall we carry on with the list?
Yes, please.
Let's carry on then. So we got The Da Vinci Code, sorry about that, in number four, which is one that you guessed. Number three. So you've seen some of the ones on the list. Can you guess any of the top three?
Okay, the top three. And they have film adaptations, and that's why people think it's okay to pretend that they've read it.
Why don't we give some people a song, and they can send in their requests. They can send in their suggestions of what they think are in the top three for these books. So make sure you send them in to studio@saranonline.co.uk, the Facebook fan page Squabblebox, at Siren FM on Twitter.
Or you can always text in on 077 97 800 716, or send a message if you're listening via the Radio Player app.
Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's first community radio station. We are your interactive entertainment Sunday breakfast show, Squabble Box. My name's Kai Valentine. I'm here, as always, with the lovely Miss Maisie Anderson. And we may be 96 episodes in, Maisie, but it's never going to get old going, the lovely.
It's kind of become
a running joke now.
It has. You know, running jokes get funnier when you point them out.
Oh, I know.
Explaining the joke.
Yeah, it's so funny. Ah.
It's like telling a stranger an inside joke and then explaining the inside joke.
Or even the best line ever. Oh, you had to be there.
Had to be there gets you out of every awkward situation when you tell an antidote that isn't that funny.
Good morning to everyone at home, including Alan, at The Vintage Alan on Twitter, who says, good morning, sounds great. Good morning to you, Alan. Lots of people raring to go for Tracy Edge's show from 10 a.m. this morning. Make sure you stay tuned after us for Sunday Girl. And we are talking all about fiction today for Squabblebox Sunday Breakfast, and we've been counting down the 13 books that that the nation have claimed that they read when actually they've only seen the film.
Now, we're at the top three.
Yes.
So I'm going to get another couple of goes at guessing.
Yeah, you get another couple of goes at guessing.
Well, Chris, Chris from Siren.
Yes.
He has sent in an email and it's given me an idea.
Oh, okay.
He's said that the one book he always claims he's read but hasn't is The Colour Purple.
I don't know that book.
Do you not?
No.
Oh, it's amazing.
Oh, right.
It's a difficult read. It has a lot of adult themes, but it's very profound in the statements it's making. I haven't read it, but I know it, and it is on my list of books I need to read.
All right. Well, I will. I'll definitely look more into that, because I've never heard of it. But the film, obviously, we're talking about film adaptions as well. The film has a 94% audience rating average on Rotten Tomatoes, and it has on the tomato meter.
I suppose it really depends what side of the equator you're on.
88% on there, so that's. You know, that's
a high ranking, yeah.
Huge for Rotten Tomatoes.
Tomato.
But no, it's not on the list, Maisie.
Okay, so now I need to start thinking of my own.
Three of the biggest book series, they're all series, of all time.
Okay.
Not including Harry Potter.
So, Lord of the Rings?
Lord of the Rings is number two.
Okay.
So you've just got third and first.
Okay, so Lord of the Rings. And you're saying they're all franchises?
Yes.
Okay, I'm trying to think of... I did mention Harry Potter earlier, so I know it's not either of them.
Let's see whether I can... Let's do this, because there was a hashtag trending at earlier this week, which was hashtag explain a film badly.
Oh, I love explain a film badly.
So let's see if I can explain this book series / film series
badly.
Right, so it's war, a couple of kids in another world, there's a guy with horns and a lion,
Oh, Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah,
was it? Explain a film badly means that you give a different interpretation.
Yeah, I can't do that off the top of my head, though.
No, it's quite difficult to do off the top of your head. Okay, so Chronicles of Narnia, is that number three, then?
Yes.
Why would you lie about reading a kid's book?
So the number one most... The number one most lied about book that people in this nation say that they've read, but they've only just seen the films, is Maisie.
Oh, I don't know. Winnie the Pooh?
I will give you a clue.
Please do.
Adele. Sam
Smith.
Oh,
James Bond.
There you go.
People claim to read the James Bond books.
Let's go through some of the statistics that are on here. That is the most lied about book of all time.
Really? Yeah. Well, books,
yeah.
Wow. Like, I can imagine Sherlock Holmes being like that. Like, a lot of people would claim to have read Sherlock Holmes, but then actually only just read or watched the film and TV adaptations.
And we see that one quarter of 18 to 24-year-olds, that's 25%, for people who don't know basic
math. Like us.
One quarter of 18 to 24-year-olds admit to having lied about reading J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings when they have just, in fact, watched the Peter Jackson films.
Really?
So that's amazing, really. And if I think that's third... And that was 25%. Imagine what...
How many people have been lying about reading James Bond?
Oh, no, that was second, sorry. 25%, so James Bond must be even higher. That's incredible. So have you ever lied about reading a book, Maisie?
Well, I did kind of lie about the books I was supposed to read for my A-level literature.
Yes.
Regeneration... was one of them, and Jane Eyre was the other.
I did the same with The Kite Runner, like I say.
However, I don't think Regeneration has never been adapted into a film, so I just had to get context clues from, like, clip notes.
No, that's not...
I know, I was really bad.
We've asked people this morning about their favourite pieces of fiction, and just to finish off, James Spencer, local Lincoln comedian, has got in touch and said it's clearly Charlotte's Web.
It is such a sweet story.
So I think that's where we're ending today's show, Maisie.
On Charlotte's Web.
Yep, Charlotte's Web. If you'd like to listen back to this episode or any of our previous 96 episodes, you can do by going to the Trending Topics Network on iTunes. More details can be found at Squabblebox on Twitter or tweet us at SirenFM. As well. Make sure that you stay tuned throughout the day, as there are quite a few shows coming up, including from 10 a.m. Tracy Edge's Sunday Girl will be here, Quirky Questions, Music Reviews, and all. She's going to be here from 10 a.m. Following that, there is no Sunday replay this week with Ed Wellman. He has many, many rehearsals on, so if you're here to tune in to Ed Wellman, do stay tuned for some other great stuff, including a repeat of yesterday's Tank Top with Brian Rudd. It was his 400th episode. And the show went out for the first time yesterday. However, due to the online stream being down, it only went out in the Lincoln area. Now all his listeners from around the world can tune in at 1 till 2 p.m. today. 5 till 7 p.m. is Sorry for the Inconvenience. And 9 till 11 p.m. finishing off your evening is Native Radio. We'd like to give a big thank you to everyone who has tuned in this morning, don't we, Maisie?
Of course. We do.
And make sure that you tune back in for Squabblebox Sunday Breakfast, same time next week. Coming up next is Sunday Girl. She keeps a Moët Chandon in a pretty cabinet. Let them eat cakes, she says, just like Marie Antoinette. A building remedy for Christophe and Gilles.